Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another Starborn Support Radio presentation with your hosts, Michael Austin Melton, Julia Weiss, Laura Weiser, Audrey Starborn Hewins, and Chris Augustine. And now Starborn Support Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Starborn Support Radio. This week, we've got a great show for you here, and I'm sure you've seen the advertisements on Facebook. We have this week Mark Passio, and I'm just going to get right into the introduction here because this guy has done so much. Mark is an independent researcher. He's a public speaker. He's a radio talk show host, and he organizes conferences, and he's a freedom activist from Philadelphia. Mark has undertaken the task of assembling vast amounts of research in the areas of metaphysics, occultism, spirituality, symbology, and consciousness studies. Now, Mark began presenting this information in the form of a presentation series entitled What on Earth is Happening in 2007. Now, his intention was to bring the implications of this body of knowledge to the greater public awareness. Now, Mark launched his own website in 2008 at whatonearthishappening.com. And in 2010, Mark began hosting his own internet radio show weekly, also called What on Earth is Happening. Now, it continues today. It continued as a podcast for about 6 months. He took 6 months off, and now he's back on the air again, and I'll have him tell you all about that when he gets on here. Mark was also one of the co-hosts of the Free Your Mind conference series, the Philadelphia-based conference on consciousness, mind control, and the occult. Now, over the years, Mark has worked closely with activist groups in his area, such as the Tesla Science Foundation, Truth, Freedom, and Prosperity, and Survive and Thrive Philadelphia. Mark is currently teaching an extensive seminar called Natural Law, the Real Law of Attraction, how to apply it in your life. Now, Mark will be with us to discuss his thoughts, feelings, and facts behind the dark side of alien abduction and disclosure. I worked with Mark during the great 2011 Free Your Mind conference held in Philadelphia, and I find him to be an intelligent, passionate, and well-versed researcher, social scientist, and public speaker. He's a good friend of mine, and working with him is energizing, and you always, always walk away with much more than you came with. Mark is a noble, tell-it-like-it-is speaker who is trying to assist in the raising up of humanity from the grasp of evil, darkness, and chaos into the realm where they belong, well beyond ignorance and closer to the divine. Join us now as we welcome Mark to our virtual studios to talk about the realities behind disclosure and abduction. Mark, welcome to the show. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me here. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've talked, and I know you've done a lot of work between then and now, and I was watching some of your videos on YouTube and also on your website, and you're really a tremendous, tremendous gatherer of information. This week, however, I want you to spend some time talking about the dark side of disclosure, the dark side of abductions. We try to present positive information, and we try to have on abductees who have been through the process. And usually our message is fairly positive, but there, you know, as above, so below. There is a good and evil side to everything. And I thought of you because you're so well-versed. You would be a good guy to come on and tell us about what you have learned about the sure. darker side.
Absolutely. You know, I have so many thoughts about this, and much of it is conjecture. I'm not going to come here and tell people I know the absolute truth about this entire phenomenon or its nature, because I most certainly do not. I don't think anybody really has the monopoly on truth when it comes to what's going on with the extraterrestrial presence on this planet.
No, agreed.
But I could give you my impressions and my understanding from years of research into this field. And I will start this by saying I don't think it's all negative. I think that there is a positive aspect to it. I think there are positive beings in the universe. I think there are many positive beings right now who have incarnated on this planet to try to assist in the elevating of the collective consciousness of the people of Earth. So I think that that goodness extends out into the universe as well. But there also are imbalanced forces out there in the universe that we have to be very aware of. If we're going to be streetwise and we're going to understand truly what's going on around us, and as a result of that knowledge, empower ourselves to really improve our condition here on Earth, then we have to understand that there are certainly dark forces that we are battling against, not only here on Earth, but also controlling forces which possibly are higher than the physical dark forces that are really controlling things here on this planet. So the first thing I'll say is that for people who don't understand that this planet, the whole dynamic that's taking place on this entire planet is about control, then they have not really become awake and aware, and are still in kind of like a trance mentally. They're in mental bondage still. Mm-hmm. And again, that's strong language, but it's the case, you know. So for people who just think it's business as usual and it's about just living life on Earth and, you know, finding something that you like and just, you know, not really paying attention to what's really going on in the world in a bigger way, in a global sense. You know, I'm not really speaking to those people. I'm talking really here initially to people who already understand that what we're in is a situation. The situation globally on Earth is a situation of slavery. Human beings are a slave species. Now, they're not intended to be a slave species, and they don't have to be eternally be a slave species. Mm-hmm. But right now, humanity is enslaved on this planet. The conditions are those of slavery. And I mean, I'm stating that as a matter of fact. I'm not asking anybody to believe it, and I'm not asking to have a debate whether that's the case. I'm saying that I know that factually. Now, when that much I can tell you is knowledge. When we get into what the nature of other beings that may be visiting here, have been interacting with this planet for millennia, or hundreds of thousands of years possibly, maybe millions, and the nature of their being, then I would have to say I am then talking about conjecture. The situation here on Earth, I could tell you factually that is a situation of slavery. Humanity is in a hostage situation. One of the things I really want to kind of lead into talking about this material that may shock a lot of people, while I have not been in my experience in this lifetime physically taken to my knowledge, or to my conscious knowledge anyway, I would make the statement that everyone on the Earth right now is an abductee. Mm. Because Earth is a farm. We are living in a hostage situation on the Earth, akin to a farm, and animals living on that farm with farmers farming those animals as livestock. Now, some people would immediately say that that's a hugely negative, depressing, and outright frightening, scary worldview. I don't look at it like that, because I look at all knowledge as positive. The only thing that I ever see as negative is ignorance, is refusing to look at a situation and see it for what it is. If we can look at a situation and see it for what it is, regardless of how dark it may seem at first, that is an empowered position to be in. If you were in a hostage situation, would you want to understand about your captivity? Would you want to, first of all, know that you were being held hostage against your will by people who or entities that did not have your better, care in mind, that they didn't really care about you and they're just using you to their benefit? Would you want to know that if that were the case? Do you think knowing that would put you in a better position in a sense of empowerment to take action and do something about that? Or would just ignoring that and thinking that it was another way or, you know, refusing to accept that that was the situation, would that create empowerment? Of course not. That would create disempowerment. So again, I'm not stating something as seemingly shocking as what I just said to make people feel bad or to make people feel like there's nothing that can be done or to scare people. It has nothing to do with fear-mongering. It has absolutely nothing to do with scaring anybody, okay? It has to do with if you honestly look at the situation and you come to a conclusion that the situation is slavery, akin to how animals are enslaved on a farm, then you have to say to yourself, if I'm being honest with myself about the situation here, we can do a few things. We can look at what made it that way, okay, at the causal factors that created it, that put that condition in place, and we can also then look at the causal factors of what maintains that condition and what keeps that condition in place. That's doing what's called making a diagnosis. When there's a bad problem, specifically like with the body, okay, if you're sick and you feel ill, you wouldn't just say, let me just ignore that. I don't need to worry about that. That's a problem that'll just go away on its own. That would probably be a bad approach, and more likely than not, you're going to get more sickness as a result, okay? What you would want to do is make an accurate diagnosis as to the nature of the problem. Then you would want to find what the causal factors of the problem are. So you want to know what the problem is, and then you would want to know what's causing the problem, the causal factor of the problem. When you do that, then you've made an accurate diagnosis. And I want to break down the word diagnosis for people so they know the power of that word, where that word came from in the ancient past. The word diagnosis is entirely from Greek roots. In the Greek language, if you go back and you look at the parts of the word, the English word diagnosis, the first part of it, D-I-A, dia, in Greek, okay, the word dia in Greek means through or by way of or by this particular method. That's what the word dia, it's a preposition in Greek, in the ancient Greek language, and it means through, by way of, or by method of. And then the word gnosis, G-N-O-S-I-S in English, okay, in Greek it means knowledge. That is the word for knowledge in the Greek, ancient Greek language. So when we put these together, the word diagnosis means through knowledge or by way of knowledge or by a method of knowing. Okay, so only when we have the knowledge about the nature of the problem and about the causal factors of the problem are we ever going to be in an empowered position to solve the problem and change the condition for the better. That's what I do. I try to get to the causal factors of the problem. So my worldview, when you hear that, okay, and I'm telling you, I believe that we are living on basically a prison world, a hell world, a farm world, and we are the animals on that farm, that initially sounds, wow, this guy is so depressing, it's such a horrible, horrific worldview. But in essence, what I'm doing is trying to eradicate that slavery. I call myself an anti-slavery activist. I oppose slavery in all of its forms. Slavery is morally wrong in every form that it could exist in, whether it's overt shackle and chain slavery, okay, like, you know, we saw a pre-Civil War period in America, or whether it's covert mental bondage, mind control, mental slavery, financial slavery, debt slavery, okay, and then slavery through this insidious force called government that is a claim of authority over other people and saying that some people are the masters who make laws and then they command other people who have to obey those laws whether they're moral or not, whether they're just or not. Okay, that's called slavery if we're being honest with ourselves, whether we want to admit it or not to ourselves. Now, a lot of people listening won't see it like that. And what I would say to them is they don't understand the truth. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and say that's your opinion or that's your perspective, because it's not. The truth is that government is slavery. It doesn't make a difference whether you don't understand it or see it like that. That's what it actually is. It's not
right.
because I think it's that way. It's not because I'm saying that's what it is. It's because if you actually look at what government is, it's the claim of authority by a certain group of people that they may issue commands called laws while other people have a moral obligation to obey those commands. That is slavery. If we stop euphemizing it, that's what it is. That's
right.
the condition that's going on here on the planet. Now, what I've done in some of my recent work is I've looked at what put that condition in place. Where did the idea that we need leaders, we need masters, we need rulers, we need government come from? And my work led me down the rabbit hole of understanding that the entire conceptual idea and implementation of all forms of government or all forms of slavery, once again, I like to stop euphemizing things and call them what they really are, okay? All forms of slavery have actually come from humanity's ancient interaction with non-human entities on this planet millennia ago. And again, this work is proliferous. You're not going to just go to one researcher, including myself, and get all the details about it. You have to be what's known as an eclectic aggregator of information. That's
mm-hmm.
what I consider myself. I consider myself someone who, and the word eclectic means you're going to go to varied sources. You're not just going to look in one place. You're going to gather information from everywhere in the widest way possible so that you can take it all in, filter it, and then come up with a picture of understanding regarding all that knowledge that you just took in, all that information you just took in. So that's what aggregation of information is about. Most people don't really do that, or they don't do it effectively. They don't do it with an effective method. Okay, they are going to certain sources, and it's limited. Okay, they're not looking at all different perspectives. So what
mm-hmm.
I did is I went to tons of different perspectives from all over the place. Revisionist history. Traditional history, traditional anthropology, revisionist anthropology and archaeology. And then, of course, the UFO phenomenon researchers themselves. Historians in the field, the abductee research, of course, and then people who have tried to research the ancient interaction of some of these beings, these non-human entities, whatever their nature may be, with human beings in our distant past. And a picture emerges. Of course, we have limited time on a program like this. So to give people just an overview of my take on this, and again, this is largely now conjecture. I don't have the full picture, but it is based on research that is out there, okay, that people can take into themselves and understand. And once again, I'm not telling you this is the written in stone gospel truth. This is simply my understanding of possibly what occurred in our ancient past. And that is that beings, whatever their nature may be, and again, I don't try to get too hung up on trying to identify the specific nature of these beings that we're talking about, because
mm-hmm.
I feel regardless of their nature, whether it happens to be physical, extraterrestrial from another planet like ours in another solar system or galaxy, whether it happens to be some sort of interdimensional nature or some type of a spiritual nature that we don't quite understand, a non-corporeal nature that humanity doesn't even quite grasp. Regardless of what the nature of these entities or beings that have been interacting with us it happens to be, their methodologies are essentially the same. So I don't get tied up in that question, because a lot of researchers, in quarrel and in fight over that, and that gets us nowhere, okay?
Right.
You have to understand, I'm just going to refer to them as non-human or simply extraterrestrial, meaning they are not originally from the Earth, which is what extraterrestrial means, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So these beings interacted with us. They came here. And we were not in the current form that we are now when they arrived here on Earth in the ancient, ancient past. And we're talking hundreds of thousands of years ago, minimum.
Right.
So there were other indigenous beings here on this planet at that time. And they were living in harmony with the Earth, and they were evolving according to the natural laws of the cosmos. They were living on the Earth. They were a species that was not quite like us, but had characteristics that were similar to us. They were primates or hominoids, hominoid-type beings. When these beings arrived, they had an interest or an agenda in this planet and or its resources that had really nothing to do with us or what we used to be, or this other form, this other evolutionary form that used to be, I guess you could say, we're going to be proto-humans or our ancient ancestors.
Right.
These beings were here for their own reasons, and we didn't really have anything to do with those reasons. Now, again, researchers will get tied up in arguing about what the nature of that the reason that they came here. Again, it can somewhat matter, but in many ways, I say, regardless of what the nature of why they came here and did what they did, which I'll get to in a few moments. So getting hung up on, well, did they come here to, you know, take certain resources from the Earth? Did they come here to do expeditions? Did they come here to, on some kind of a science expedition? Regardless of what you think they were here for their purposes and not our purposes. So what they did was, some of the researchers and the story goes, as some researchers tell, these beings needed workers. They needed people to do physical labor for them regarding what they were doing here on this planet. And it seems like, more likely than not, they came here for some sort of resources, to exploit the planet for some type of resource. There's a lot of speculation about that. Some people claim they were here to mine certain precious metals, certain other types of resources, and take those materials back to their home world or wherever they came from. But for whatever reason, they did not have enough people to do what they were doing, what they came here to do. And they decided that they would, or one faction of these beings, I should say, decided that it would be a good idea to hybridize the existing hominid creatures that existed on Earth with their own DNA, because these were genetic scientists. Part of the team that came here were geneticists, okay, on this away mission. And what they did, after much debate and quarrel among them, there was another faction among them that decided this was an immoral thing to do, and that they did not have the right to take another being and genetically modify them in a way that nature did not intend, to create a new species. So after the quarrel was settled and they decided to go forward with this plan, okay, they genetically hybridized the existing hominid species that existed here on Earth with their own genetic material. Upon doing that, a new creature was created that they considered their own genetic species that was theirs, that belonged to them, because it didn't exist in nature previously. It had some of their own genetic material in it, and they looked at it as their possession, their creation. So it's kind of like many people might look at dogs today. We've created a hybridized species by domesticating and hybridizing the wolf.
Right.
The dog species is simply a hybridized wolf taken into a miniature form through selective breeding and hybridization process, essentially. Okay. So what we're it's really selective breeding purely. So they did it this through hybridization, not selective breeding. So the species that emerged was something that nature did not really intend to exist. Nature may or may not have ever created something like a dog. Humanity created the dog by, again, selectively breeding wolves and then domesticating them. That's how that species came to be. They did something very similar to that, except they genetically hybridized the existing hominids with their own genetic material. Now, these two factions that I talk about never really saw eye to eye with this. One of them saw the beings that they made as their own creation, and it was like a child, okay? The species that we were then, which is humanity, which is what they made us. They looked at them like a child, like a parent would look at a child, okay? okay? Then the other faction of these beings looked at us as something that should not have ever been, that they didn't want to exist, that they wanted to just ruthlessly control to get done what they wanted to get done and then be finished with us. Now, the way I look at it, and some people may be horrified how I look at this. I look at it as the second group of beings, okay, that did not want to go along with this plan to begin mm-hmm. with, to create this hybridized race that is humanity, was more morally correct than the first group of beings that wanted to create our species, okay, for their purposes, and then, you know, treat us like children eternally. Okay, because that created stunted evolutionary development in this species, which is still continuing today. This is why this species is an unconscious race of beings as a body. Not, you know, there are some people here that are conscious and awake, and some coming on to full awakeness regarding what's really going on here. But it's such a tiny drop in the bucket that it's almost negligible, as I see it. The beings that wanted to do this and looked at humanity as their own creation and that they wanted to kind of like, you know, use for their purposes, but then kind of uplift and give us a chance to, you know, create our reality on our own and live here on this planet on our own. I don't think they really did us any favors by making us to begin with. Okay. I think they did create an abomination in what they did. Now, that doesn't mean that I think humanity by its own nature is horribly evil. You know, I think we're in a condition of horrible evil, but I don't think that's necessarily human nature at its foundation. But I do think that these beings basically enacted an abomination against nature by what they did, okay, by stunting the evolutionary consciousness development of a whole race of beings that could have lived here in harmony with this planet, evolved to a higher form of consciousness, and then, you know, developed into space-faring beings themselves at some point. That's what I think the track of these hominid beings that were here evolving naturally with this planet may have done. And when they did this to these beings and created us, I do feel that they broke all the laws of nature and created something that was akin to an abomination. That is, of course, continuing today in a different form because the faction of these beings that wanted to coexist with us also came down onto this planet, and instead of just performing the mission that they were on, they interbred and intermarried with humanity. So now you had this purebred species, for lack of a better name, this original non-human entity species that came here to do whatever they were doing here on Earth. They made a hybrid species to be their slave workers. Then they interbred physically through mating with the beings that they made. So now you created a second species, okay? And this was a hybridization. They created this second species, which was a sexual hybridization between their own purebred DNA from their home world with the hybridized race that they made as their slave species. So in these ancient accounts that tell this story, that recount this story, and I mean, there's tons of them. I mean, you could research this for literally decades if you wanted, for a lifetime.
Yeah, what comes to mind, the popular view is the Anunnaki.
Yeah,
that's right.
Fishin's book. I can't pronounce
sure.
his name.
And yeah. He is pulling a lot of material from the Babylonian creation epics, like the Enuma Elish, the Sumerian cylinder seals, and of course, most prominently, the Sumerian cuneiform tablets, these clay tablets that the Sumerians painstakingly etched their histories upon. But we have tons of other examples. You could look at the Mayan Popol Vuh epic in the Western world, and that tells essentially the same story. The poems of the Norse tradition, known as the Eddas, get into this creation story. the people of the African tribes, namely the Dogon tribes and the Zulu nation, they tell these stories as well. In the Indus Valley traditions, you have things like the Vedas and the Upanishads and the Mahabharata, okay? You have, of course, things that relate ancient accounts of warfare and technology like the Srimad Bhagavatam in the Indus Valley traditions. In the biblical stories, we have, of course, the book of Genesis. The book of Ezekiel tells a lot about human interaction with otherworldly beings. The book of Enoch, an apocryphal, as it is called, book of the Bible, that also relates a lot of accounts of interaction with non-human entities. What they called gods, they called them gods, they called them watchers, they called them the supernatural entities, the giants. Of course, in the Sumerian accounts, they were referred to as the Anunnaki, which means in their language those who came to the earth from above or from the heavens, from the sky. So you can go into just about any ancient historical accounts, and people will dismiss these as myths. They'll say, oh, these are just myths, they're legends, they're fairy tales. They would not have gone through the painstaking effort to tell some sort of a fairy tale to people. These were people trying to meticulously preserve historical accounts of what they had witnessed in their past, okay, and then to preserve that to their progeny. To help people to understand where they came from and what the condition was on Earth. So I don't look at these as fairy tales or myths or legends. These were historical accounts, in my view. So to go back to the recounting of this initial story, these beings, they had two basic ways of looking at us. One looked at us as, well, there are children, there are slave race, yes, to do our work, but they're also our creation, so we should look at them as children and try to help uplift them from the condition that they're in. The other faction looked at it as, these are beings that shouldn't exist in the first place. We don't want to be here. We don't want them here because we look at them as an abomination against nature. We need to just control them, use them for what we made them for, and then get out of here. Okay? And I actually look at that second worldview toward us as actually more... If I were in the same position where this was done, I would probably look at it like that as well, because it's like they did something that was so horrible that shouldn't have been done, and what these other faction of beings wanted to do was end this. They looked at it like, if we let this continue, it's going to go further and further and further out of control until these beings make an entire hell world here based in slavery, based in immorality, and based utterly in destruction and death. And that's really what happened. That's what happened. That's what the Earth and the people here have done. That's what we did. Now, I'm not saying it has to be like that. It can be changed if we decide we're going to change our consciousness. Then we can change the external manifestations that have happened here on Earth. But what they basically did is they couldn't even control the initial incarnation of hybrids that they made. So they had to go back into the DNA and disconnect more of it and dumb us down even more so that we could just do the menial labor that they had planned for us without really rebelling against them, because the initial Mark One of hybrids that they made were actually too intelligent and still connected too much to spirit, to the spiritual nature of reality to just be willing to accept their slavery and just work for these beings as they were commanded, that these beings, like, you know, basically put forward they were our gods since they had made us. And the initial Mark One race that they made rebelled, and then they had to do a further genetic tampering or modification in order to make us even more compliant. And that resulted in large swaths of our DNA actually being made non-coding. This is what scientists in the modern world refer to as junk DNA. It has nothing to do with junk. It's DNA that is part of our essence that is actually disconnected and made into something that does not code for certain characteristics, behavioral traits, or capabilities. That's what non-coding DNA is. I don't even like to call it junk DNA. Right. This is what scientists call it because they don't know what it does. So after they did that, and many of their species were interbreeding with ours, and they had created what many researchers called a demigod race, a genetic hybridization between the original quote-unquote god race that came here. They're not gods. Okay, let's make sure we're talking about that with a small g, beings who referred to themselves as gods. They have nothing to do with the god of creation, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about them in that form when I use that word, of course. These are beings that looked at themselves as our gods, okay? Small g. And this secondary race, this I should say tertiary race that they spawned, as a result of interbreeding some of their members, interbreeding with their own creation, their own hybrid creation, spawned a demigod race. Now, in the biblical stories, these are referred to as Nephilim. Nephilim means the fallen, simply mm-hmm. the fallen ones, okay, those who fell. What they mean by that is these beings were then relegated to living on earth. They were not going to go with the original non-hybrid beings who were still had space stations, craft in our skies, okay, moon bases, etc. These beings largely didn't interact with us except for some of their leadership, which came down every so often, interacted with human beings to make sure that they were doing their work, and some of the outposts that were put here on the earth to maintain control over the workers. Limited interaction with the workers, slave species. When they started interbreeding with us, then these demigod species, or the fallen, okay, the ones who were no longer allowed to be up in the heavens with the gods, were then relegated to the earth. What they did is they used this tertiary species, this third species, this hybrid between the original, quote, gods and humanity, the hybrid slave species, to act as the priest class, the intermediaries between the gods and man, okay? Because they had more of the gods' DNA in them. So they could, as demigods, as beings that didn't quite look human and didn't quite look like the gods, say, we are more like the gods than the rest of humanity, and we will act as intermediaries between the gods and man. We are your intercessors on behalf of the gods, and we'll tell you what the gods want. Well, this is the original idea of priest class, of any priest class in general, the concept of a priest class, okay? So this eventually morphed into the idea of kingship and the divine right to rule by bloodline, okay? Mm. Because these beings had more of the gods' blood and genetics within them. And what they did is they became the ancient kings of the ancient world at some point in time after the original gods left, and then they left these hybrids, these third species, that's quote demigods, in charge to rule over the rest of humanity because they had more capabilities, more knowledge, more understanding because they were closer to the gods' genome, okay? And they basically created the institutions of government and religion and left those beings in charge of the rest of the slave species, the original species that they had created, when they left and, you know, finished, the original gods finished with their mission and left this solar system. So mm-hmm. that's the general story of where I see the ancient past and what happened here and what led to the current human condition of slavery. Eventually, the gene pool was not big enough for these beings to keep their appearance because they were continuously interbreeding with other human beings. And eventually, their genetic traits got merged into the gene pool of humanity, and but they kept the institutions that they started. So this is how the concept of kingship, the divine right to rule, religious priest class and intercession on behalf of the gods for humanity came about. And it's what continues today in the form of religion and government. So that's my worldview about what happened here in the ancient past. And again, people could research this through innumerable sources. Yeah. I could give people just a quick list of people who I think have a good handle on some of the things that happened here. Of course, some of the older researchers in this, you have people like Zechariah Sitchin, William Bramley, you have people like Lloyd Pye, who unfortunately is no longer with us. You have people like Eric von Däniken, who's done some really great work. I think one of the best modern researchers in this field is Michael Tellinger, not quite as well known as some of those other people I just mentioned, but really coming on the rise as far as his great research is concerned. I highly recommend people read his book, The Slave Species of the Gods. If people have not read that, I consider it absolutely required reading. I think David Icke has done a lot of great work in this field, as has Michael Tessarion, Michael Cremo, Graham Hancock, David Hatcher Childress, Trey Smith, L.A. Marzulli. There's a guy people really need to research and look into his work. Giorgio Tsoukalos, of course, Emmanuel Volkovsky, Robert Schock, I'm trying to think of his name. He works with L.A. Marzulli. It's the person who's done a lot of the work on the elongated skulls that are now determined genetically to be a non-human race. Brian Forrester is also excellent. Just some names to throw out there for people to research. It's an extensive field of research. The endeavor to research it is endless. So you could start with some of those names and branch out from there, and you'll be researching for a long, long time if you follow some of those leads that I just threw out to people if they're not already familiar with those people that I mentioned.
Mark, I'm going to just break in a second and let people know that we're winding up the first hour almost, folks. It's 20 minutes to 9. I wanted to mention the call-in number, 646-716-8070. Mark will be willing to take your calls all night long, 646-716-8070. We've got a good guest tonight, so take advantage of it, call in, and post your questions. All right.
It's actually Flora. I just had a quick question regarding all the information you just discussed. I'm just wondering, do you feel, it just seems as though the government is trying to hide a lot of this information. Do you think that they're aware of what's going on and that we are enslaved? And are they a part of it? Are they, you know what I mean? Are they cooperating with these extraterrestrials at this point or not?
They are these beings. The people who are in control of the current government, governments, banking institutions, religious institutions, are the progeny of the demigod species that has existed here among us since we have existed on this planet. Humanity has never been free. Humanity has, and again, you know, in my own work on my radio show, I haven't even started talking about this, but I feel things like what Chris did in his meetup group, things like what you guys do here as part of this radio show, gives me a secondary forum where I could burst these ideas out there in a way that is not part of the very kind of, you could say, regimented and linear tapestry that I unveil and weave on my own radio show. So I like this. I like doing things like this as a forum to talk about things I have not yet even touched on and delved into and gone into meticulous detail on my own show. I will eventually do that on my own show, but here I'm just taking the opportunity to just, you know, burst forth what I've come to understand in a way that is just outward and open and just throw some ideas and conjecture and other researchers out there for people to go off on tangents with and research this on their own. Eventually I'll break this down in some meticulous detail on my own radio program, but to go back to your question, I feel that the governments, religious institutions, monetary institutions on the planet ultimately are the progeny of these beings, and they are continuing in they're continuing to use the same methodologies that the, quote, original gods, okay, these non-hybridized beings who came here for a particular reason and mission and made the situation here on Earth what it is, that the ideologies and the methods of control, the techniques of control that they gave to these demigod beings and instituted here on the earth to keep the population in line in the ancient past, it has just been continued down the line throughout the centuries up till the present day. So when we talk about why doesn't the government want us to understand any part of the nature of this entire phenomena, it is because at the highest levels of all of the world institutions, there is a bloodline that goes back to non-human entities. I'm not telling you that they still look like what they may have looked like in the ancient past. They have over millennia continuously interbred, but a lot of the mental traits and characteristics may carry over. And they have also certain characteristics that are bred for rulership because they don't have the same type of care that other people have. This is where I feel psychopathy came from. Psychopathy came from the disconnection of all the DNA and the genetic modification that was done for the original species, hybridized species, called humanity. The concept of genetic psychopathy, primary psychopathy as it is known, mental disease that is a damage in the limbic system of the brain, the midbrain, where a person is born without the ability to feel emotions and experience emotions physically in the physiology, okay? I feel that this is a result, and so are the other 4,000-plus genetic disorders in the human genome are a direct result of the genetic hybridization and tampering and modification that was done to the human species in the ancient past. This carried that, and because they didn't care about what they were really making. They made us as a tool. We were made as a tool for their purposes. And they weren't doing exact atomic modification at the genetic level. They were doing chemical splicing, just like we would do today in a genetics laboratory. You have to cut at a chemical level with an agent, and then let it express. That's not going to create an exact bit-for-bit replication or modification. It's going to introduce bit errors into the genetic chain, okay, of amino acids and base pairs, and you're going to have certain genetic characteristics that are going to crop up that are unintended when that genome expresses itself. And this is exactly how we do genetics today. We don't cut at the atomic level. We cut at the chemical level, at the molecular level. And that's why
that
we can't
be... psychopaths.
I feel that it does. I'm not saying that that's definitely the truth. I'm saying that I feel it's a reasonable and well-researched conjecture regarding where primary psychopathy came from. Now, you have to be careful. We're not talking about secondary psychopathy. Secondary psychopathy can be caught, I guess you could say. I call secondary psychopathy a communicable disease. Not caring and living a truly selfish life where you don't care about anybody else and you've basically lost your emotions or what people might say lost your humanity can happen as a result of conditions and can happen as a result of, you know, what is going on in a person's life. That's not primary psychopathy. That means that person still has the capacity to feel. It's just been basically knocked out of them over time through chronic conditions and chronic worldview poisoning. But if you look at primary psychopaths, they were born that way. This happened from birth. This is a genetic condition. And I feel that that's why this happened. And they're looking to preserve those characteristics in the highest echelons of power. That's why they're so obsessed with breeding only amongst their own kind. Inbreeding is a huge thing in
royalty.
It's a huge thing in all forms of control. Even if you look at ancient bloodlines that go back to the people who are controlling the banking system today, inbreeding was a big part of their bloodline. Okay, and royalty, it's a big part of inbreeding. Why do they consider they have different blood than us? Because they do have different blood than us. It's not a conjecture or just a thought on their part that they're somehow different than us. They really are because they have more of this non-human DNA within them that was the demigod's DNA, which ultimately came from these beings, quote-unquote, gods or watchers or Anunnaki, whatever name you want to give them. The name is irrelevant. It's just a non-human entity that came down here and interacted with us and created this species through genetic hybridization. So they are at the helm, ultimately. Their progeny, you could say, is at the helm of this world. And that's why they don't want people to look at their origins. They want to propagate this notion of macrobiological Darwinian evolution, and then propagate the notion of social Darwinism that goes along with it, survival of the most ruthless, stemming out of survival of the, quote, fittest in the animal kingdom. They want people to buy into that worldview because that keeps the system of slavery going, okay? They want people not to understand where these social institutions of the modern day came from, how they were derived from these institutions that were put in place by these gods in the ancient past. They absolutely don't want us knowing our origins, because a people who know their true origins are an empowered people. A people who don't know where they came from are a disempowered people. And in order to keep the slavery system going, you have to keep the slaves ignorant and disempowered. And that's their agenda. That's why you're never going to have disclosure from any official government channels. You will never have disclosure until government is eradicated from the face of this planet. Mm-hmm. Government has to go away. Then you'll have true disclosure. I tell people who are looking into the free energy phenomenon with, like, Tesla's work and other people like T. Townsend Brown and, people who have Thomas Henry Morey and, other very advanced scientists who have looked into the field of radiant energy and free energy, Eugene Malov and others. People who want to see this free energy technology come in think that they're going to bring it in inside of a system of slavery. I mean, nothing could be more ridiculous. To when I hear this, I just think, you think you're going to bring in something that's truly beneficial to humanity, and that existing slave masters are going to let the slaves have it so that they can be empowered and no longer be slaves until you end slavery. That's what has to come first. There's a progression. You have to stop supporting the idea of authority and slavery. Then you can have free energy come in. When we stop supporting the idea of authority and slavery as being legitimate, then we're going to have true disclosure. Then we're going to really go into truly alternative paths when it comes to our origins and discover it, unbound from the government-controlled scientism that is out there now, calling itself science. It has nothing to do with real science. This is a religion that is put in place and called science to protect the entrenched paradigm of existence of human origins, of what the control system wants people to believe human origins, where human origins came from, so they can propagate the entire paradigm that whole human origins theory propagates. Mm-hmm. So you're never going to hear this from any official channels. You're never going to have disclosure through official channels. The people who are still pushing for that are, it's folly. It's utter lunacy, because they don't understand the level of control that they're under. They don't understand the level of evil that is running this planet. Earth is a farm. The farmers have no interest in you knowing where you came from. They have no interest in empowering you through knowledge. They want you dumb. They want you docile. They want to control. That is their only purpose. That's it. They were charged to do that when they first were put in charge here on the earth by these entities that came here in the ancient past, and they have no intention of stopping doing that, because they've been living a lifestyle of kingship for hundreds of thousands of years possibly, and they don't want that gravy train to dry up. They want to keep it going at anybody's expense, certainly at the expense of the freedom of the majority of the people of Earth.
Mark, I have a quick question. Lately we've been seeing a lot of suicide among some of the bankers. I think there's been about 8 or 9 of them in the past couple of months, or maybe 6 months or so. And what do you think that's all about?
I don't know. I can only offer some conjecture. I can't tell you I know what that's about. But I would say maybe these people came online to some knowledge regarding a possible coming financial collapse that they see destroying society, or certainly destroying their own wealth, and they don't want to stick around for the outcome. That's
right.
What I possibly think it is. The other possibility is maybe they're getting ready together to blow the whistle on some kind of a financial collapse coming, and the people who want this to happen in a controlled fashion are going to try to control the chaos that results, to bring in possibly martial law or to bring in more draconian control measures. Quite possibly they were going to blow the whistle on something like that, and they were put down by higher – levels of their financial hierarchy. One or the other of those scenarios to me seems likely. But again, I don't have knowledge of that. I'm just offering some conjecture.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Sure.
Chris?
Hey, following in line here, going back to one of the original things you said about the bloodlines and having these people generations later being carrying on that same agenda of control, do you think that they have a conscious understanding of this deep-rooted connection to the other race, or do you think that they just have this slanted worldview where this just seems right to them and they just continue doing what they were, programmed to do?
That is a really, really great question, and I think it's a combination of the two. However, I would say it's largely the latter, that more of the people involved in the perpetuation of the control system believe that it must continue and that they are doing something that is right or good. There is a smaller class of people, which you might call the super class or, those who are truly in the know. And they know consciously what's going on and are consciously directing the agenda of control. If you asked me what those numbers are, if I had to put an actual number on it, I would say that the conscious group of controllers globally probably numbers no more than 10,000 individuals on the entire Earth, consciously. And think about that. There are 7 billion people on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
10,000 people control 7 billion, it's a piece of cake. Because if you can control the mind, if you can control the worldview, if you can control what people believe is true by controlling information and only putting out information that you want them to understand or know about, you control their behavior. Mm-hmm. That's how behavior is controlled. Through the control of information. When 5 companies control all information, almost all information, barring the alternative media and alternative blogging that's going on the Internet, when 5 companies, and possibly being now consolidated further, I know we're seeing more consolidation happen. Comcast and Time Warner are merging now, so this is going to be, it's just going into fewer and fewer hands. How many people consciously direct 5 news companies? How many people would you say at the highest levels are consciously directing that? A few hundred, if that?
Yeah.
Of course those people could be in the know, because that's all you really need to do. See, you don't control the world physically anymore. See, they realized that the humans were going to eventually rebel from overt control. When you can see your prison bars, you say, let me out. I don't want to be in here. But if they've taught you, you're free, See, this farm isn't a factory farm. It's a free-range farm. We're on a free-range farm. Earth is a free-range farm. That's all. And there's some different controllers of different farms, and that's called governments of different countries. We have different, how a farm is laid out? There's different land.
Right.
It's all squared out. Okay? It's the same thing. That's what the countries are. And you might have one farmer that tends to this land and the animals on this piece. You have other farmers that tend to this land and the animals on that piece. That's the earth. The earth is just one big farm. The countries are different sections of the farm, different farmers tending the farm, and the animals, the livestock, which are human beings. But you know what? Let me just say this before we end this hour. This is only their belief system of what's really going on here. Because you know something? I'm no one's livestock. I've recognized what's going on here, and that means I am not cooperating with it, I am not participating with it, and I know that I have the right, through any means available and disposable to me, to end the slavery system that is taking place on this planet. The problem is most of my other fellow human beings do not know the same thing that I do. Therein lies the problem. Therein lies that problem. So therefore, all you can do is try to educate your fellow human man to what's really going on here on this planet, so we can start getting on the same page and doing something about it. Now, most people on this planet are so far away from this understanding that they're going to die in a state of ignorance. And that's why people have said, it's better to teach the young than try to re-educate the old. Because so many people are attached to their absolutely erroneous worldview, and they're so attached to the way things that they think that are going on. They can't see things for as they are. They can't admit that they were wrong, that they've been duped, and that they've been living their life as a slave. That's too painful for them. I just did that 17 years ago. You know what I mean? I admitted all that to myself 17 years of my life ago. So the process of transformation that's been taking place for me mentally and spiritually over the last 17, 18 years, you know, puts me and many other people who have done the same thing to themselves, that puts a small class of people who have done that work upon themselves way past where most other people are at, because they won't even admit the current condition.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Julia. I felt for many years growing up, and especially when I started working, I had a sense that, why the hell did I have to do this? It's, you know, and then, of course, you know, when I first started working, it was before the Clinton years, and we got, like, 7% raises. Then as the years went on, we would get, like, 3%. Then it was, like, 1%, even when the company was doing good. And that was when the CEOs started getting these tremendous salaries, and they kept, you know, all these, I worked for communications companies, so it was like, you know, a whole buyout, one after another. And I could see there was something strange going on in the economic world. I mean, I felt it. Everybody else felt it. I was a little more aware, and this is before I was into UFOs, and I thought, why can't we all have jobs that we really love, that are benefiting humanity? We need to work together like the Indians used to, you know, the Indian tribes work together as a community. And it just seems like it's dog eat dog, and you're struggling just to get a paycheck. So, like, I understood that money and monetary stuff kind of, like, is a tool to control us. And that, so anyway, all the things that you're saying is really resonating with me, you know, that there is some sort of control. But right now I'm into this whole movement of, like, I really want to ascend into a new way of being. I don't want these controls anymore, and I want to be able to, you know, I do believe that there's positive extraterrestrials that are trying to get us to ascend. So I know truth is, you know, strength is knowledge. Okay, once we know, what's the next step? Do we not keep our money in the savings banks? I mean, what are the physical steps that we need to take in order to get control?
The very first thing is to free your mind.
Mm-hmm.
If the mind is still in shackles and it believes in illusion, you're going to be enslaved, period.
Mm-hmm.
Because whatever happens in the mind inevitably manifests in the physical world. Mind is the source of everything. And then what we think, eventually we care enough about to then take action upon, and then that manifests in the world through our behavior. So the first answer to your question is you have to get your mind out of illusion and understand what nature and reality actually are. That means seeing the world for as it actually is, and not buying into notions that are illusory. And this means, first and foremost, to stop believing in the religions of the world. And I don't mean the cultural religions like Christianity, Judaism, Islam, although they are what I would group as part of religion. I'm talking about the universal overarching world religions. There are two of them. There are two overarching world religions. And really, if you want to be truthful about this, there's really five overarching world religions, okay? But two of them are really super entrenched and the most powerful of all the religions. The other religions don't have as much of a hold over all people. So I would say out of the five religions, the forms of religion that exist on the planet Earth, there's five forms of religion, and I'll break them all down. There's three that I would call ancillary or secondary religions that they're not universal. In other words, different people are divided and not everybody believes in those three, okay? The different factions of people cling to those three religions, but not all people believe and cling to those three religions. So they're what I would call the lesser of the five religions that are operating on the planet. Okay? Then there's two great universal overarching world religions, universal religions that operate on Earth. Okay? So let's start with the actual three ancillary religions, all right, or what I would call secondary, not as fully entrenched and universal. We have what is called cultural religion. This would be what people traditionally view as religion, okay? Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Shintoism, Taoism, etc., and so forth, okay? Baha'i faith, go on and on, okay? The traditional world or cultural religions, all right? That doesn't have 100% control because nobody agrees on those. They're all in different little factions broken up, and then even those factions are broken up into different denominations, etc. Okay? You have Sunni versus Shiite, Muslim, you have, you know, Protestant, Catholic, you know, Baptist, etc., and Christianity, okay? You have, you know, Hasidic Judaism, Talmudic Judaism, and you go on and on in how many different cultural religions there are. I call that cultural religion, and I group it all into one category. Then you go up above that, or you should say you have another right-brained form of religion. So the religion all largely works through the right brain, and I'm sorry, my dogs are barking there. I could not put them away in this spot that I normally do when I do some shows, so if they're a little ornery, we're just going to have to put up with it.
That's okay. That's all right. Cheddar and Wah are welcome.
they're great. Another right-brain form of religion that is really has a deep hold over many people in the modern world is called the New Age movement. It's something that I've vehemently attacked and exposed in my modern, in my recent work, I should say. And I'm actually going to be exposing it even more deeply in next month, March 22nd. I'm going to be speaking in Asheville, North Carolina, on the topic of New Age deception. You can check that out on my website. But the New Age movement and cultural religions are what I call the right brain religions, okay? So we have religions that are deeply working through the control of the right brain to get people into chronic right brain imbalance. Then we have two religions that operate on the left brain. The first is scientism. I've already mentioned it. This isn't real science. This is what I would call government-funded paradigm entrenchment. This is keeping a paradigm entrenched through calling something science, but you're only putting out research that enforces the existing paradigm. I call this scientism. It is a religion. It is a belief system. Okay, and this is works through the left brain because this is the super skeptical mindset latches on and stays attached to this religion. Now we have two other overarching religions. And I would say one of them largely works through the left brain, and one of them is the ultimate controller of all mind on this planet, largely. I would say it is probably the most dominant force over the human mind out of any other thought processes, out of any other belief system. The first one, which is the lesser of these two, you know, these are the two great world religions, as I call them, the universal worldwide religions. The first, and it is the lesser of the two, which largely works through the left brain and the imbalance toward the left brain hemisphere, is authority. The concept of authority, that there can be such a thing as a certain person or group of people having authority, being the authority or the ruler over someone else. This is a religion that the bulk of human beings believe in. The vast majority of human beings believe in authority. Okay, the people who don't believe in authority are a tiny percentage, I would say. If I had to put a number on it, it's less than 5% of humanity, easily less than 5% of humanity that do not believe in the concept of authority, okay? I might be being a little bit, you know, harsh there, the number may be a little bit more, but I'm going to put the number 5% who know definitively that authority is an illusion and a religion, okay? And I may be being harsh. I also may be over-exaggerating it. I don't know. It's just a guess on my part. The number one world religion, which is speaking to your original question now, that is universally believed in by almost everybody else, and if you look at it and understand it as a religion, you will understand it is in control of all of the other cultural institutions and religions. And that is, please tell me what it is.
Money.
There it is. Thank
there
you,
is.
Michael.
Yeah.
Money is the universal world religion that has control over all of the cultural institutions on this planet and controls all of the other religions. Is religion controlled by money? Of course it is. Cultural religion is totally dominated by money. All the people pouring money into those institutions on a daily basis, you know, and what's it being used for? Oh, hey, in the Catholic religion, in the Christian religion, it's being used to basically bribe family members whose children have been molested and abused by pedophile priests. That's one of the things that money's going toward, that people are giving that money to, you know?
Mm.
So does it control the New Age movement? The last New Age expo I went to raked in so much money through selling their little trinkets that I can't even begin to calculate how much money was made at something like that.
Wow.
You know, it's not even really about the information. You know, I went to a New Age expo a couple of years ago here in Philly, and I asked people at the expo, I was just asking random people, do you believe in government? Is government real and legitimate? Like, you know, do you vote? Do you are you a Republican or a Democrat, et cetera? And the vast majority of them that answered said that they were Democrats. There was a few Republicans there. But almost universally, everybody said, yes, I believe in politics. I believe in government. I take part in the political process. And I believe that government is legitimate. Almost every single person at a so-called spiritual expo. There's nothing spiritual about that. Zero. People have to understand, real spirituality is true anarchy. Unless you are a true anarchist, meaning that you don't believe in authority, that you understand authority is an illusion. I'm not talking about a political left-wing anarchist that is really a communist or a socialist in disguise. I'm talking about somebody that understands the real meaning of the word anarchy and lives like that, according to the non-aggression principle, that there is no such thing as any authority by one man or group of men over another, okay? That you know that you're your own ruler, you're your own master, you own yourself, and you're not bound by the laws of man, you're only bound by the laws of nature and morality, the laws of morality. Once you understand that, you live the non-aggression principle, you're an anarchist. Anarchy means, literally, again, it comes from Greek roots, the ancient Greek roots of the word, tell us the true meaning of the word. A or an, a prefix in ancient Greek, means not present or absent, not there, not present, absent, okay? And if you tack that onto a word, it negates the word. It negates the root of the word. So the root of anarchy is arc, A-R-C-H, an arch, okay? A-R-C-H is actually from the Greek language, the word archon, A-R-C-H-O-N, in transliterated into English, okay? The word archon is what these beings were. They were the archons. The archons are still in control. See, another thing I want to really clarify before I finish telling you what the word archon means is, do I think that these beings really fully left here? No, I don't. They didn't really fully leave here. They're still here watching of what's going on, watching what became of their creation. But the beings that they interbred with us, the fallen ones, or Nephilim as the Bible calls them, they are still here in another form, that they just bred into our species, interbred, and they're continuously trying to interbreed with themselves so they preserve their characteristics. But the archons, the original beings, it means master. The word archon means master. So now let's look at the two parts of the word anarchy. An archon. An means not present, not there. And an archon means master or ruler, as in the master over a subject, like a king ruling over subjects as his slaves, or the master or ruler, a ruler ruling over subjects, a master ruling over slaves. That's what archon means. Okay? It doesn't mean self-rulership. It doesn't mean self-ownership. It means somebody else owns you. That's what you would refer to an archon as, one who owns another being. Okay? And if you believe in that concept, that there is legitimacy to one being owning another being, then you believe in the archons. You believe that the archons' claim to own us is legitimate. And it's not legitimate. It's an illusion. It's nonsense. It's total BS. To be really blunt about it, that's what it is. It's nonsense. Okay? No being owns truly another being. See, another problem, another part of the problem is, so, you know, when we put these words together, anarchon, anarchy, it means no masters, no rulers present. There's the absence of masters. And if you have the absence of masters, what do you also have? What invariably, if there are no masters, must also be absent.
Authority.
Right? But if there's no authority and hence there's no masters, what else is there not?
Money?
There's no slaves.
No slaves, right?
No slaves. No one could be then said to be a slave of any other. What's the absence of slavery called?
Freedom.
If no one's enslaved, then what are they? If you're free.
They're free.
So then people think you tell people in a word association game, see, this is how mind control works. When I say get out of mental bondage, they've convinced most people. If you do a word association game with most people and you say, what does the word anarchy mean? They will tell you it means chaos. Guaranteed. Most people will say the word chaos. Okay? They'll say lawlessness. The word anarchy doesn't mean lawlessness. It means no masters, and hence no slaves, and therefore true freedom. It doesn't mean no laws. No laws would be lawlessness. Anarchy means there's no masters or rulers, and hence there are no slaves. So there is true freedom. There's no slavery. And they've convinced people. People have obfuscated language to a point that the ruling class has actually manipulated the meaning of words and language to a point that they have convinced most people that a word that means freedom actually means lawlessness and chaos. And that's why they can get most people not to want it. They're convinced that if there is nobody in charge and ruling over other people, that there would be chaos on the planet. And right. Nothing could be further from the truth. You know what we have now? We don't have order through control. Control is chaos. Is slavery order? Can slavery ever be order? Slavery is not order. It can never be order. There can never be order manifested through slavery. The only thing that could ever manifest through slavery is chaos, which is what we have. We're not in a state of order. People say there would be chaos if there was no government control, and if there was anarchy, there would be chaos. Guess what? Surprise, surprise, there is chaos now. You have chaos now. We're in the state of chaos. To create order, you have to abolish slavery. Slavery has to be abolished for there to be order. And that's the first step you have to get to understand that so deeply, so fully, that your mind is out of the cage of believing that control and authority is legitimate, and that most of all, that it must continue, which is where 95% of the human species is at. They're in that cage of the mind. And therefore, if you're in a cage of the mind, the external manifestation must be a cage. It must play out that way, as below, so above, invariably. That is called the law of correspondence, and it is a law of nature that can never be broken. Now, the action that has to be taken then is to bring that message to as many other people. If you recognize that you do understand that, and the only way the conditions are going to be changed is when enough people understand that, the question to answer, what action do you take, is you have to bring that message to others so that more people understand that and stop wanting to be a slave. That is the work that we are here to do, that the New Age movement and all of the other religions have actually dissuaded people from. They have taken them off of that mission. See, the real mission of incarnating spiritual warriors to this planet We, in whatever other spiritual realm we came from before we incarnated into this world, into this hell world, this prison world, this farm, okay, we knew the situation. We were briefed on the situation, and we were crazy enough to come here. And our mission was clear to us in that realm. It was to end slavery on the earth. That's the mission of the incarnating spiritual warriors who came here into physical incarnation on this planet at this time, period, in world history, in Earth's history. We came here to break down the existing paradigm that had been put into place by the Archons and end slavery on Earth. And you know what happened? We got tied into this notion that it's all okay, it's all relative, the physical world doesn't matter, we're coming to be rescued, an ascension is happening any minute now, and we don't need to do real-world physical work on the ground in the physical 3D world on this planet to end slavery.
Right.
That's what happened, and it derailed the spiritual warriors from their mission. And that's what's going on right now on the planet. And until people understand the subtle deceptions that have been played to them by the New Age movement and a lot of people in the so-called exopolitical field, okay, in the so-called, you know, UFO phenomenon field, whatever you want to call it, disclosure field, they're not talking about the main issue. The main issue in this field of endeavor is slavery on Earth. How it got to be that way, how it's propagated, how it's maintained, and most of all, how to end it. And you end it by first freeing your mind that that concept is legitimate in the first place, because slavery is never legitimate, and it can never create order. It can only breed more and more and more chaos, destruction, and ultimately death.
Hmm.
That's my answer to that question.
Well, that's quite an answer. So what's your opinion? You were talking about the dark side of abduction by going into all this. What do you think, from your research, an abductee can do that's plagued by these things and is having negative experiences?
So this is another great question. It's something that I don't get asked hardly ever, and I never usually get to make my opinions or feelings known about this, the entire abduction phenomenon in general. I consider myself an anti-magnet for anything like this, okay? Things of some sort of a extra-dimensional or higher-dimensional spiritual nature don't flock to me, and I believe it's for a reason. I have asserted deeply my sovereignty. There is no being that is higher on any three-dimensional world or anywhere in the space-time continuum than myself, and equally, there is no being that is higher than anyone else in the space-time continuum. So in other words, the highest being in the space-time continuum is Michael Melton. The highest being in the space-time continuum is Chris Augustine, simultaneously. The highest being in the space-time continuum is Mark Passio. The highest being is every single individuated unit of consciousness in the space-time continuum that we call the cosmos, the universe, the multiverse, the quantum foam, whatever you want to refer to it as, okay? Every single being is on the same level. That's called sovereignty. That means no one is a master and no one is a slave. No one rules over anybody else. There is no spiritual hierarchy. Everyone is on the same level, the same level playing field. We are all here to learn and grow through our experiences, and nobody owns anybody else. You own yourself, and that's all you own. Okay? Now, there is one force that rules above all of that, and that is the creation itself, or the force of creation that put all the laws of the universe into effect. If you want to call that God, fine, go ahead. I don't care. I'm fine with that word. Some people are not. Some people want to take offense to that word. You want to call it that, fine. Okay? I'm not here to tell you what that force is. I'm not here to forge a relationship between you and that force. That's your work to do. I'm nobody to tell you what that force is. Okay? But it has put laws into effect. Laws that are unwavering. Laws that work 100% flawlessly all the time, and laws that are ultimately directing what the experience on this planet and any other planet where any society is operating are, okay, what the manifestations will be that happen on that planet. So let me just quickly break down this dynamic. These laws that govern the consequences of what happens on any given planet are moral laws. They are the laws of right and wrong. And this is another reason that the New Age movement is so dangerous. It propagates the notion, much of it, not everywhere within the New Age community, but much of the New Age movement and a lot of the so-called teachers within it propagate the notion of moral relativism, which is the notion that there is no such thing as objective standards of right and wrong behavior that are universal. Nothing could be further from the truth. There is no such thing as moral relativism. It's an illusion. There is objective right and wrong. Right and wrong exist in nature. Right is actions that you take that do not cause harm to others. Wrong are actions that you take that you have no right to take, which is why it's called a wrong. It's not a right, because they harm other people in some way by taking something from them that you have no right to take, whether it be in the form of hurting them, taking their life, taking their property, or taking their rights and freedom away. Mm-hmm. None of those things are your possessions to take. So if you're taking actions to do that, you're stealing from someone else. You don't have that right. Hence, that's called a wrongdoing. So that's what natural law is. Natural law, as I refer to it under the umbrella term natural law, is the laws that govern. They are the universal, non-man-made, binding and immutable conditions that govern the consequences of the behavior of intelligent beings. Mm-hmm. And I say the behavior of intelligent beings, meaning beings that are even capable of developing morality and having the capacity for moral behavior. So we're not talking about the animal kingdom. We're talking about the kingdom where there is higher consciousness, where there is the capacity for higher consciousness, meaning the intelligent species. We are ostensibly one of them. I don't know how much intelligence is really going on the Earth right now, but ostensibly we are an intelligent species. Okay? So natural law is universal. It exists everywhere in creation, and it's non-man-made. The creator of the universe put these laws into effect, not anything in the 3D world. They're binding laws, meaning it doesn't matter whether you believe in them or accept them, you are still bound by them. You cannot believe in gravity all you want. Good luck jumping off the 30th floor of a building like the bankers are doing seemingly over and over again, and saying you don't believe in gravity. Let me know how that works out for you. Okay?
Right.
Okay? So enjoy what you get on the other side of that belief system of believing that that law doesn't bind you. Okay? They're immutable laws, meaning they cannot be changed by anything we do. Nothing we do in the 3D realm is going to change these laws because they're not put into effect in the 3D realm. They're put into effect in a higher dimensional aspect by the creator of everything that is in the 3D realm. Okay? So that's what natural law is. And what they do, what these laws, this body of moral laws does, is it actually governs the dynamics of behavior. See, human beings, you know, we'll accept the notion that there's laws that govern all the physical things. Newtonian laws, oh yeah. Isaac Newton wrote them down. He described them in equations. It governs all the physical laws, all the laws of dynamics we'll want to accept. But then when it comes to human behavior, we'll say we're unconstrained by law in the universe. Law doesn't govern us. It doesn't govern what we do or don't do. No. We're exempt. We are exempt from law, from cosmic universal law. You know, that only applies to the physical objects in the world. We can measure those, and we can understand how those dynamics work, but there's no dynamics that govern the consequences for behavioral actions. No, we're exempt, okay? It's folly. It's utter lunacy that we would think we, as a species, are exempt from universal law, and there is nothing that is governing human behavior. See, it's not something that is completely predetermined. This isn't predestined or predetermined. I'm not talking about a predeterministic force. Natural law is a deterministic force, but it's not predetermined in the sense that we don't have free will.
Right.
And this is just something that's happening to us. There's two dynamics in creation. There is a deterministic component within creation that is a creative component. Then there is a a dynamic component, or what you might call a random component. Some people would even call it a chaotic component. While there's a determined and orderly component called natural law, which is fixed, it never wavers, it's immutable, it works its way, it does all the time, at every point in the universe, flawlessly, at all times and places. Then there's free will. That's the non-deterministic. That's the flowing and dynamic, and some people would say even possibly chaotic force that exists in the universe, where we have a choice whether to live in harmony with natural law or not.
Mm-hmm.
And we're using that free will unwisely. We're not obeying the laws of morality. And there's a law that exists in nature. As morality increases through our understanding of natural law, and therefore we become moral beings, obeying natural law and making moral decisions in life, and not cooperating with immoral peoples, institutions, entities, and not doing immoral actions, freedom invariably, inevitably, also increases as morality increases. It's an equation. Morality and freedom are proportional, directly proportional. You could write it down as a mathematical equation. Morality is directly proportional with freedom. Freedom is directly proportional with morality. Conversely, if we do not obey the laws of nature, if we do not obey cosmic moral law, then we get the opposite. We get chaos, and we become enslaved. We go into deeper and deeper bondage until we change that decision and use our free will wisely to obey the laws of morality. And when we refuse to live in harmony with moral law, with natural law, and we live in opposition to it, invariably that species, that society becomes more and more enslaved. And that's where we're at as a species, because we don't understand natural law. We don't understand the laws of morality. We think we're exempt from them. We think we could do whatever we want without consequence. And therefore, this part of the law of freedom, I would call this the law of enslavement. As morality declines, freedom declines. As morality declines, enslavement rises. Slavery goes on the rise. You could write it down mathematically. Morality is inversely proportional to slavery. Okay? Morality is inversely proportional to slavery. Immorality is inversely proportional to freedom. As morality goes up, freedom goes down. As morality goes down, as morality goes up, freedom goes up. As morality goes down, freedom goes down. They are directly proportional to each other. Okay? So this is what natural law is. Okay? Living in harmony with it means we have developed conscience and become moral beings, and therefore we're going to become free. And this is what people have to understand. There's only one way to become free, and that is to become a more moral people who understand the laws of morality, the laws of nature, live in accordance with them because they truly, definitively know the difference between right and wrong, which is what conscience is. Conscience is not an action. Conscience is knowledge. It is and it means knowledge. Conscience. Con is a Latin prefix meaning together, and the word science in English comes from the Latin verb sciere, sciere, S-C-I-E-R-E, where we get science, S-C-I-E-N-C-E. Science comes from sciere, the verb in Latin meaning to know or to understand. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean to understand? It means to understand the difference between right and wrong. That's what conscience is, and we do it together, con science, common knowledge. Con means together or with other people. So con science means to develop the knowledge of right and wrong together with each other. Okay? And exercising conscience means that we're actually living in harmony with natural law. That's taking the action, the right action. Willfully choosing right action over wrong action is the exercise of conscience. It is not conscience in and of itself. It means you're exercising your knowledge. You're putting your knowledge into practice. That's what converts it into wisdom. Wisdom means we're doing something that is right with what we have come to understand and to know. That's what wisdom is. Unwise behavior means we're taking the wrong action. We haven't developed the knowledge and understanding, and therefore our actions are wrong. They're not in harmony with cosmic moral law. And, this is the dynamic that people have to understand has everything to do with disclosure. This has mm-hmm. everything to do with the UFO phenomenon. This also has everything to do, I feel, with the abduction phenomenon. Like I said, I feel we're all abductees because we're being held in a state of slavery against our will, whether we know it or not. I happen to know it, which makes it even more extreme and painful. You know you're in a state of slavery being held against your will. It's certainly more uncomfortable than somebody that believes that they're free and doesn't understand they're being really held under a state of duress. But when it comes to abduction, you say, how can we protect ourselves against this? The reason I feel I've never been physically abducted in this dimension, in this physical domain, is because I deeply know that I'm sovereign, that there is no one above me except the creator of the universe who put the laws of the universe into effect, which I am bound by. There mm-hmm. is no other entity in any dimension of existence that owns me. I own me. I own my consciousness. I own my body, which is my vehicle for the expression of my consciousness in the physical realm. No one else owns that. I know that so definitively that if any entity did attempt any kind of a takeover of my physical body or my consciousness is strong enough to repel that, and I'm going to use what is known in the world of the occult as the lost word, which is no. The most powerful word in all of creation, the word no, where you reclaim all of your power, all of your sovereignty. Okay, you say you don't have a right to take me. You don't own me to take me. I own myself. You're not touching me. You're not taking me for your purposes. Not without my full knowledge of what you may want to do. Okay, then I'll decide whether I want to take part in that or not at a conscious, willful level of non-coercion. Because I know that is my right, and I know you taking me against that will is not yours. That's how I feel that I would keep any of these entities at bay and away from me. So, and I'm not saying anybody that has been abducted to feel guilt about that. Okay?
No.
And I'm not telling you all abductions or every single purpose of them is ruthless and negative and sinister. I don't want to try to paint that picture either. There probably are many different agendas at work. But here's the point I'm trying to make. Let me give it to you this way. Let me give you an analogy, okay? If a group of scientists working in southern Africa, let's say South Africa, developed a hybridized creature, let's say they took a Komodo dragon, okay, and they hybridized it to a point that it was so utterly messed up that it barely resembled a Komodo dragon, that it couldn't do the things that animal could do, that it became more vicious and ruthless, and it even like maybe started eating its young. I don't know, whatever crazy, out-of-control, demented thing you could attribute to making the creature into something that was akin to something that was literally genetically retarded, okay? And they did that, and they hybridized 100,000 Komodo dragons. And then they put them on a little tiny island off the coast of southern Africa, or let's say Madagascar or someplace like that, okay? And they confine them to a little community there, and they let this total ridiculous genetic condition just run rampant there on the island of Madagascar, let's say. In the state of Pennsylvania, I think that's where all of us are from, maybe some of us are from New Jersey, okay, in the tri-state area right around here where we're all from, okay, would you be so concerned to go and rescue those Komodo dragons from their condition? Would that be something that would weigh on your mind and concern you every day of your life, or would you just be living your life?
Most
you
likely,
want to go
yeah.
travel to Madagascar and say, my God, how dare these scientists do this genetic hybridization and manipulation to these creatures? How
right.
dare, and I have to go and put it to an end and make sure that somehow I reverse this condition. Would you be so keen to do that? Of course you would. So what makes you think all these other beings are so ready to come down here and rescue us from our situation? They're living mm-hmm. their own existences, and they want us to do it for ourselves. They don't want to have to pick us up by our bootstraps and then be responsible for us forever. that would be maybe even possibly further stunting our spiritual development and our evolutionary development and consciousness. So I don't feel that these beings are here to say, we want to help you do this. They might be giving us some pointers. They might be saying, you can do it, giving us some encouragement, but the work is ours to do for ourselves. We have to take ourselves out of this condition by an act and an effort of our own willpower. Willpower. And no one wants to hear that. They want to hear there's going to be an easy answer, that the Andromedans are coming to rescue us, that it's just a matter of time and the ascended masters are going to appear from the clouds and, you know, give us everything we need to understand, and there's going to be a wonderful ascension into another dimension. This is New Age thought, okay? What I consider myself is a realist who is absolutely in a higher dimension of consciousness and mind. But you know where my feet are? Firmly on the ground. Firmly on the earth. The work is to be done here and now.
Right.
Not somewhere else and not sometime else. As Ram Dass said, be here now. That's where the work is. It isn't anywhere else and it isn't any other time. So that's my full answer to that question.
It's a good one.
That was a good one, yeah. Incredible. I agree.
If I could jump in, I have something I want to bring up because I know we have, you know, about 20 minutes left in the show. I don't know if you guys run over ever. If you do, I'm willing to stay any extra if you want to do any extra. But if you want to wrap it up right at 10, I'm fine with that too. Just let me know.
Sure.
I could go on and on and on. But I would like to say something about inaction in several communities because, you know, to go back to your question about what can we do? We have to take action. That's ultimately the answer. It's about knowing the truth, then speaking it to other people. And in the UFO community, I just want to say this while I have a platform in, you know, the whole UFO world, because I don't usually bring this up on my show. There are so many wealthy people in this community. I mean, some extremely wealthy people in this community. Believe me, I see them all the time. I've given lectures at people's homes and at other meetup groups that are at very, what I would deem, extravagant lifestyles and places. Let's put it that way, okay? I'm telling you there are people out there that have resources at their disposal to say the least. To say the least, and I'm probably under-exaggerating the amount of resources we're talking about here, okay? And you know what they're doing? They're sitting there, not getting involved, just saying, let's talk about this more. Let's have more, you know, let's have more, you know, presentations, more research. Let's do trips here and there, okay? But actually getting involved in taking a stance against the slavery system, no. We can't do that because then we're putting our resources in jeopardy. Yeah, and we can't actually use our resources toward trying to end the slavery system and help people to get a bigger message out in a wider way. You know,
that's money. That's money ruling
us.
Again.
Yeah, it's just about us edifying ourselves. We want to know more. Let me tell you something, folks. You could describe the prison till you're blue in the face. You could learn every aspect of this farm. You could learn all about how wide the barns are, how big the fences are, how tall the grass grows, what other kind of animals are on the farm. But until you're actually getting involved, taking action, and putting your resources toward getting the farm to close its doors and to stop doing what it's doing so that the animals can actually be free, you're not actually doing any great work. You're spinning your wheels, and at best, you're describing your prison cage, your prison bars, and all the locks and doors and the bars and the floor and the walls. You're describing all of it, but you're not actually getting involved in ending it. You're not actually getting involved in doing something to bring that condition to an end. And I just want to put the word out there that there's a lot of people in the UFO community that one, have a lot of resources at their disposal, and they're essentially not putting those resources to use at all because they're more concerned about their comfort than they are about human freedom.
Mm.
And a second aspect I want to bring up, and again, that's you could look at that as me just taking a pot shot against people, and it is in a lot of ways. I'm just coming out and being honest about what I see out there, and I see a lot of this out there. Okay, I also see a lot of UFO and alien researchers getting sidetracked by a lot of New Age thought.
Mm.
I'm not telling you everything in the New Age movement is a deception. There's a lot of good information in it, too. I never make a blanket statement about that. But I am saying there is so much subtle deception within the New Age teachings that one needs a very high level of spiritual discernment to be able to separate the wheat from the chaff in that field of endeavor. I highly recommend people going to my website and checking out my New Age bullshit talk that I gave at the Free Your Mind conference and then gave an extended version of in my videos section as a video podcast. That will clarify a lot of these deceptions. They're very subtle in many cases, okay? That's number two. Number three, I want to say that two communities need to come together at some point. The UFO community or the non-terrestrial intelligence research community, for lack of a better term, okay? Mm. The non-terrestrial research community phenomenon, a community, must at some point come together with people who already are looking at issues of human freedom, what you might call the freedom movement, okay, which people think, well, one's a community that researches this, quote, supernatural, okay, or the paranormal, quote, unquote, and one is into political things. But what I'm trying to explain to you is this is all about the spiritual nature of what's taking place on this planet when it comes to control. That's what it's about. Until these two movements, let's just call it the extraterrestrial movement, research movement, and the freedom movement come together, okay, we're not going to be making any headway. We're not going to be really making any grounds. I try to act as a bridge between these communities. I know that the researcher Michael Tellinger has also tried to act as a bridge between these communities. I think there are certain researchers who are doing a good job with that. I feel that Linda Moulton Howe is doing a pretty good job with that because she's talking about the police state more and more as well. I also feel Whitley Strieber has been doing a better job with that. He's getting into talking about the political aspects of the police state that are going on. Okay, I feel Michael Tellinger is phenomenal at that. I feel David Icke is very good at that. I feel Michael Tesarion is one of the best researchers doing that work. And if people have not seen Michael Tesarion's Origins and Oracles DVD box set series, you are missing out so gigantic of a puzzle piece when it comes to this whole phenomenon that I cannot recommend this series enough. This gentleman is one of my mentors and is one of the most prolific researchers in this entire field, and many people in the UFO research community have never heard of him. You must go and look into the works of Michael Tesarion, Tesarion, Origins and Oracles. Watch them all. There's 22 parts to the DVD box set. It's a 22 DVD set. All of the DVDs is about 2 hours. It's like 48 hours worth of material or more, okay? It is required viewing, listening, and researching material. Whoever has not seen this is missing one of the biggest pieces to the human puzzle that has ever been told. That's all I can say. If I haven't given it enough of a plug, I don't know what else I can say to plug it. It must be watched by everybody out there, period. Okay? So that's the end of me plugging things, but I just want to say the freedom movement largely doesn't want to talk about these issues that we're talking about. They want to dismiss it and think, oh, it's all just crazy conjecture and it's tinfoil hat weirdos. Okay? And then the UFO community largely isn't online to talking about the issues regarding the destruction of human freedom on Earth. You see very few researchers getting into that field. More are coming onto it. I think Richard Dolan's coming onto it pretty nicely in his recent material. Okay?
Yes.
There's many more researchers that are talking about the police state measures. You have people like Alfred Weber who talks about exopolitics, who has been talking about that as well. Laura Magdalene Eisenhower, she also gets into a lot of the crossover between the extraterrestrial phenomenon and the freedom issues that are taking place on Earth. These dynamic subjects need to be bridged. They are seemingly unrelated, but I'm trying to explain to people they are intricately interwoven, interrelated, and can never be separated. They must be studied in their entirety together as a whole. It's not two separate things. It is one field of research. It is one field of understanding, and that's what people have to understand. So I'll take any other questions, or we could go to the phones, or wherever you want to do from here on out. I just wanted to say those couple of little things, thoughts that I wanted to put out there for people's consideration.
Well, that's really great, and I appreciate everything that you say, Mark, because I think it's very important that personally that ufology people in it, abduction community, really take a look at what you're talking about. It's important because I think, it's the only way we're really going to get a grip on what's going on. But what I want to ask you is, and I've never asked a guest this before, would you commit to coming back on this show on March 30th, that's the end of next month, to continue talking about this issue?
March 30th is that a Sunday evening?
That's a Sunday evening, yeah.
I probably could do that. I have to look at my calendar, Just get a hold of me after tonight's broadcast, and
sure.
I think it's open, but I'm not 100% sure, but I definitely want to come on a future show, and if I'm open on that date, I will commit to it once I take a look at my schedule.
Well, that's great. That's great, because I just think that, more of this needs to be heard. More of this needs to be really pounded into some of the people's heads out there, the way you deliver
sure.
it.
Absolutely. it's my approach, I try to take a tact that is forceful, unapologetic, and I wouldn't say it's a violent tact, but it is a forceful one. There's a big difference between those two things. Forceful mm-hmm. means you're going to stand your ground, not back down, put out what you have come to understand in an unapologetic way. I don't sugarcoat things. I don't see the world through rose-colored glasses. And when people are taking that approach, I try to tell them, hey, you need to wake up and understand what's really going on here and get streetwise about what's taking place. I like to call my approach streetwise spirituality. It's not spirituality where you're off in a spiritual daze, meditating constantly and, constantly thinking that everything's just going to work out. Sometimes things don't work out, depending on free will choices that are made. Sometimes things go into a prison. Sometimes things go into full-on destruction. That can happen, okay? There's
yeah.
nothing that is outright preventing that from occurring. That very well could occur as one of the possible outcomes. Doesn't have to be like that. A whole different outcome could happen where people come online spiritually in consciousness, make a whole new world that isn't based in slavery, that's based in freedom, where we develop free energy technology, and we actually then explore off this planet with our peaceful brothers and sisters in space and in other dimensions of existence. That absolutely mm-hmm. could happen too. But both of those scenarios are dependent on what we do with our free will, whether we use it wisely or unwisely, whether we understand the laws that are operating in the cosmos or whether we refuse to acknowledge them. Absolutely. So, my approach, like I said, Michael and others, I like to call it a streetwise spiritual approach, not a Pollyannish spiritual approach.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's effective. And, this is what I think we need to get out there. You guys have any other questions?
Well, I have a comment. I'm a practicing Buddhist, and I find a really strong Buddhist principle is, you do have meditation, you do have chanting, but you've
yeah.
got to have action.
That's
and
right.
I find in my own life that when I do both, that they support each other. I could chant, like you said, you can meditate all day, but if you never leave the house, what are you changing?
That's
so
right.
you have to, be a part of your community. And
is this Julie?
Yeah, it's Julia.
Yeah. Julie, what I often ask people, and I agree, I do feel that Buddhist principles are powerful if they're taken in their undiluted form and, you know, the essence, the heart of the Buddhist tradition, just as the heart of any other cultural religious tradition can also get one at the spiritual principles of truth. So I have respect for the original Buddhist tradition as well. But here's what I want to ask you. Where are the Buddhist monks in talking about this? Where are the Buddhist monks in exposing the police state? Where mm-hmm. are the Christian priests? Where are the Jewish rabbis? Where are the Islamic imams? Where are all of these people? Where are they?
They're in their little synagogues and churches. They don't want to rock the boat.
That's right. Let me tell you what the actual thing that's going on there is. There's a thing called 501c3 status. Look it up. Okay? It's called tax exemption for religious organizations.
Oh, sure. Right?
All of the money they take in is tax-free, which means they're not paying into Big Daddy's system of enslavement. And in return for that tax exemption, you know what they sign? They sign a waiver to say, we don't talk about Big Daddy and his enslavement system.
Mm-hmm.
If they do start talking about it in a way the government doesn't want them to talk about it, you know what happens? They don't shut them down completely. They revoke their 501c3 status as a tax-exempt organization. They're subject to the same confiscation of wealth that happens in every other institution. So they want their gravy train running nice and smoothly. They don't want to have to pay into Big Daddy's corporate system of enslavement, of confiscation of wealth. So they say, fine, I'll button my lips and let the money keep flowing. That's what's really going on there, and hardly anybody else will ever tell you that.
Well, I practice a form of Buddhism that we practice in our homes. We don't go to a Buddhist temple. I mean, strictly, you know, we go from house to house, and every day I practice from home. So there's no money involved. So that's why I like it, because I feel... But yes, I feel there's a whole new movement towards spirituality that, you know, we connect to certain religions, but we're not adhering to. I mean, I'm Jewish by birth, and my synagogue's $3,000 to join. Well, what if you don't have any money and you want to, you know, how many people have that every year?
Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm like, I decided to join my country club instead and enjoy the pool rather than, you know, the brainwashing that goes on. So
one of the things that I want to emphasize to people is that when they encounter these religionists, these people in these positions of quote-unquote authority or influence, let's say, in religion, you have to bring this message to them, and most of all, in a very no-nonsense, almost in-your-face kind of way, pose the question to these people, what are you doing to expose this? It's not just about working in soup kitchens or in hospitals, and I'm not telling people don't do those things.
Right,
okay,
right.
They may be doing things that are very good in the physical domain. Okay, they're not reaching people in the mental domain, in the mental aspect, the psychological aspect, to help to break down slave think, because largely they're still in slave think. So many religionists believe that government is legitimate and God ordained it. You know how many people I hear this from? Are so-called Christians. They don't know the first thing about the teachings of Christ. And again, people who hear me talk about Christ, his message, I understand astrotheology. People I've taught astrotheology, okay? I understand religion as astrotheology. I'm talking about the allegorical message that underlies the being, whether he is real or allegorical, whether it's an allegorical archetype. The message is the same. And what he was preaching was a message of freedom. People just can't even look at that religion, you know, and see who are the three enemies of Jesus biblically who ultimately led to his death. You had the Pharisees and Sadducees, which were the entrenched religious institutions at the time, who claimed that he was, you know, heretical and, you know, preaching against
their version
of the Word of God. So that was the organized church or priest class.
Right.
Then he upset the money changers, which was the financial institutions, okay, by getting angry and overturning the tables at which they were doing usury at the temple at, okay, by charging people ridiculous rates on temple coins.
Hey, Mark,
okay,
I just want to...
Yes.
Mark, I just want to say we're going to go into recording until we're done this question.
Great.
Okay, so however long it takes.
Great. And then who are the people that ultimately put him to death at the behest of those people? The religious institutions, and again, whether this was historical or whether this is just allegorical, is irrelevant. It teaches the same message. It teaches the same lesson. Okay? The institutions, the entrenched institutional power structures of religion, money, and government are all working together. Because who ultimately killed the consciousness of Christ by killing him, by crucifying him, was the government. The government, the political institution known as the Roman Empire, put him to death, and they put him to death largely at the behest of both the religious institutions of the Pharisees and Sadducees, which were the entrenched Judaic traditions at the time, and the money changers, who were the banking institutions at the time, who he upset all of those people and was telling them, render to Caesar what is Caesar's, which means don't be attached to anything in the political realm. Give up the political realm. It wasn't saying give them all the taxes that they want and ask for. It was saying let political things be political things and spiritual things be spiritual things. They have nothing to do with each other because politics is an illusion. That's what the essence of that message was. He was telling people you don't need the government. He was telling people you don't need the religious leaders, the priest class. He was telling people you don't need money. As long as you develop a higher level of consciousness that is based in love and the non-aggression principle, and also the self-defense principle, because Jesus was not a pacifist. Even the archetypal figure, if you don't want to accept it, believe in it as a historical personage, which I don't necessarily, you can just look at the teachings, and he was telling people to be prepared. You know, when the disciples asked him what they should keep at their side, he said a purse, a bag, and a sword, and described it, meaning the purse was money, the bag was supplies that are needed to be on the go at any given time, and a sword to defend yourself against aggression, against the aggression of government. And that wasn't allegorical. People want to insist that was an allegorical statement. It was a very literal statement. The purse was an amount of something to be used for exchange or barter. The bag was literally what we might call in the modern day a bug-out bag, something where you keep survival supplies so you could be on the go if persecution came knocking at your door. And then the sword was literally a Roman sword. He wasn't talking about the sword of truth in this instance. He was talking about a Roman sword, the best weapon at the time, technologically, that it was an equivalent military weapon. Just like we might consider a battle rifle today, okay? So there was no, in early Christianity, there was no notion of turn the other cheek. Turn the other cheek didn't mean let your enemies walk all over you, let people who are out to do you harm walk all over you. Turning the other cheek in that sense evens out the scars that you get on one cheek, you'll get them on the other, because that's exactly what will happen, okay?
Right.
Turning the other cheek meant those who initially reject your message, who you care about, who you're trying to explain to them what's really going on, and you care about them, you're like your family members who don't want to hear what you have to say, okay, you give them another chance, even if they spit at you, even if they accost you with derision and say you're crazy and you don't know what you're talking about. You keep bringing the truth before them over and over and over and over and over again, okay? That's what turned the other cheek meant. It was a call to continuously use your will to work upon the people around you who you care about. That's what that spiritual message was. Not to say to an enemy, hey, you just shot at me, or you just beat me, or you just took away my inherent natural rights that aren't yours to give away. Can I please have some more, and can you please do that again? And I'm not going to do a thing. I'm not going to lift a finger, and you could just keep doing it unchecked. That has nothing to do with the spiritual concept of turn the other cheek. So, and many religionists insist that it is that way. And, you know, again, pacifism is something 100 completely percent different than an understanding of the non-aggression principle combined with the principle of self-defense, which is what real spiritual enlightenment is all about. We need to understand both the sacred feminine principle of non-aggression toward our fellow beings combined with the sacred masculine principle that if our rights are accosted by violence, we have a natural inherent right to defend ourselves with physical force if necessary. If we tell the person, you are coercing me and you do not have a right to do that, you are taking my natural rights from me, you are impinging upon my natural rights when I have harmed no one, stop, desist from doing it, or I will use defensive force to defend myself. That is absolutely part of the entire message of spiritual awakening, and people need to understand that without both of those principles firmly in place and acting in conjunction with each other and having a deep understanding of those two principles, you're not awake at all. So that's what I just wanted to say regarding you know, what real awakening is about. And I think we need to take this message that I've explained about slavery and what the real awakening process has to do with, take it out there to the people who are sitting there not doing anything with their resources, not doing anything with their position of influence because they're too afraid to lose the wealth that they have amassed, that they are doing nothing truly good with. Okay, they're sitting there in a state of fear-based consciousness saying, oh, my God, if I start to speak out, I'll lose what I have. I'll lose what I have. I'll lose what I have. You know what you're going to get as a result of that form of consciousness? You're going deeper and deeper into bondage.
Right.
So our task, if we understand what I've laid out here today, is to reach those people who are in those positions of influence, who are in those positions of having resources at their disposal to use toward the furtherment of human freedom. And I'll leave it at that.
Mark, that's great. That's excellent. That's so good. And your message is absolutely clear, and I think, you know, that's why I want you to come back. I want you to come back so that you can continue, you know, to kind of break some of the deception. I mean, you know, a lot of it is in your face, but I mean, there is a big deception in even in the UFO and abduction field that I think people need to hear. So
absolutely, I'll definitely come back in the future. Just, you know, let's get in touch with each other and set up a definite date. March 30th may work out. Again, I have to look at my schedule, but let's definitely also, if we could, reserve some time for calls. And that one, I know I kind of like really went on in depth about some things in this one, which will give people a good framework to understand my material and then look
right.
more of it on my own website. And
right.
I took some of your guys' questions. Maybe we could then open it up for some callers and see what the general mindset or zeitgeist that is happening among your listenership is, and I could take some of their calls, questions, comments, and concerns.
Absolutely.
Sounds
okay.
Great.
All
thank
right,
you so
man.
Much.
Guys, I want to thank all of you for giving me this opportunity. Again, I love stuff like this because I don't usually get into material like this on my own show, so this really gave me a new form to just open up and unleash stuff that I really do want to talk about, give people a little preview of things I'm going to be getting into in depth in a big way in future shows on what on earth is happening. Probably not coming up for at least a few months, maybe a couple of months, but it will be eventually unfurled, unveiled, and unpacked on what on earth is happening future radio shows. So thanks for this opportunity to do that in a smaller way in advance to that way that I'm going to open it up in the future. So thank you.
You're welcome, and it's our pleasure, Mark. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay,
absolutely. Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
Have a good
night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Welcome to another Starborn Support Radio presentation with your hosts, Michael Austin Melton, Julia Weiss, Laura Weiser, Audrey Starborn Hewins, and Chris Augustine. And now, Starborn Support Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network.